No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's 160. Yes, 160 recorded shows that we've done, however many you may have listened to, who knows. I'm Jess Root, your host of CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site for the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, we are in full force in training camp. In fact, the entire NFL is now, I think, in camp. So we are officially at the beginning of NFL stuff, not just NFL talk and stories that we make up. We are in real football with practice and pads and preseason game this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. It's time for NFL football. Especially with the Cardinals, there's been a lot of days off. And guess what? Everybody's taking a day off on Thursday, apparently. But, it should be fun. We're going to get to see some live hitting. It's going to be great to watch the young players. And then, as we'll talk about, there's one player in particular that everybody's kind of wanting to see what he can do.
But this is our – so the last time we were on a couple of weeks ago, it was our training camp preview. So we've already had, more than a week, almost 2 weeks of training camp. We had the red and white practice. We've got the first preseason game. So this show is our training camp takeaways. And also we're going to preview kind of the things we're watching for the first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game. So the kind of the topics we're going to focus on in this show, number 160. And again, thank you guys for listening as always. We're going to take away what are our biggest takeaways. Probably we're going to focus on four each. What are the four biggest takeaways we've had from camp so far? Who are the players who are helping themselves so far, hurting themselves? Jared Valdir. This is something new. Is it Jared Valdir had a day off last week, and it turns out that he was contemplating his NFL future. And then we're gonna wrap things up. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame game and things that we're looking for. So hopefully you listen to this before the game. That way it's not, old. In terms of what's been happening with the Cardinals, they've made a few roster moves here and there. Most notably, the players that they've let go. Alani Fua was waived injured. He's going to end up on injured reserve. At some point, he might come back. But, some notable players that have been let go. Alani Fua, waived injured. They let Eli Buka go. It was announced on Tuesday night. And other than that, they made the signing of Tremont Williams after Ronald Zamort, a guy that was having a good camp. Ronald Zamort went down with an ACL tear. And so they signed, not Brandon Flowers, but Tremont Williams to add to the cornerback room. And it kind of changes the dynamics of the competition there. But we're going to talk about, so that's what we're going to start with. We're going to talk about takeaways. We're going to talk about who's helping themselves, who's hurting themselves. We're going to talk about the whole Valdir thing and then talk about the Hall of Fame game. So let's go ahead and get started about our four biggest takeaways from camp so far. And for you, Seth, what is your number or one of your biggest takeaways from camp thus far?
I think the biggest takeaway that we've seen is just how much time off they're giving Carson Palmer. He's had, 3 days already in 9 days, 10 days of practice. It's clear that he's on a pitch count. And the reason he's on a pitch count is they don't have any idea what his arm has left. They've acknowledged that he overworked himself coming into 2016. That was part of the reason he started out so sluggish. It wasn't until he went to taking time off during the season, missing that San Francisco game, and he was able to kind of get back on track. And I think overall, it's just fascinating to watch this, because there are still some moving parts with this offense. It's not as though they've brought everybody back. Even slight switches of DJ Humphries and Jared Valdir, that's a big deal. Carson Palmer's going to have to get used to, you know, two new tackles. Yes, they're the same tackles, but they're playing different positions. You know, John Brown being back, they kind of got to get their rhythm back together. And then who's going to be the third wide receiver in that group? You know, is it JJ Nelson? Is it Jerron Brown? All of that information has been really fascinating to me to watch, because they are not just hell bent on giving Carson Palmer days off. They're fine with it. And it makes sense from the part that they have to, you know, they have to keep his arm live, but it's just such an oddity when you look around the NFL at Drew Brees and Tom Brady, two guys that are, you know, at advanced stages of their career, much like Palmer. And you don't see that type of thing happening, you know, and it makes you, one, feel bad for Palmer, but it also is kind of, it's just one of those things where the Cardinals know where their bread's buttered and they can't ruin it.
Right. And the thing with this is that he's looked good. And so it's really interesting to see that, because not only as he trusts them on this, but this is something that the Cardinals have planned and it seems to be working. And there's another facet to it. It's the fact that they have other quarterbacks that they want to evaluate. If Palmer's taking every single rep of every single practice, you know, they brought in Blaine Gabbert or they were going to draft a quarterback, they weren't going to get the reps that they needed. And so it's kind of two parts. There's part, hey, Carson doesn't need to throw it this much. And two, we got to take a look at other guys for beyond this year or whatever. And I wonder if Palmer does more work in the offseason than say a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, or if they don't throw as much in the offseason. And to be fair, the time off in training camp so far is no big deal at all, because he wasn't going to play in the Hall of Fame game. They reported like a week and a half. They basically reported a week and a half before they normally would have. And so these end up just being bonus practices anyway. But yeah, one of the takeaways is the fact that with the limited work, just actually how in sync Palmer looks. It doesn't look off. His arm strength is there. It's obviously working. And so that's one of my big takeaways, is that this plan that they have, which seems really unorthodox thus far, is working really well. And when he's on the field, especially in practice, the offense looks good and it's moving. It moves the ball. The offense, I know in the last, the red and right practice, that offensive line was doing really well against the starting defense. So that's one of my takeaways, is the fact that Palmer, yours is the fact of his workload. Mine is he looks good. It's working. And that gives you some hope, as long as it doesn't fall apart, that he's going to bounce back and not, you know, I had the question today from our Cowboys writer at Cowboys Wire. One of the pieces that we're doing is shared piece and the exchange on the questions. And he asked about regression on Carson Palmer. And like, last year was his regression year. He regressed back to his average stats. And the way he's going right now, it looks like he can be closer to 2015 than he was 2016.
Exactly. And that's the first thing that you want is, I mean, the reasoning makes complete sense. And you know, I just didn't know it was going to be this extreme, especially knowing that he wasn't. I mean, we've known that he and Fitz and Dansby weren't going to participate in this game since, I think, practice one or two, right?
Yeah, pretty basically.
I mean, so it's been known. The rest of the starters not playing came out today, but, you know, and so that's just fascinating to me. The second thing that I've taken away from this is there are question marks on that defensive line. And maybe, and this could be a good thing, maybe it's that they finally got the right five guys on the offensive line and they're developing a chemistry and gelling. But based on, you know, the red and white practice, don't call it a scrimmage and all of that, it seems like they are in need of a spark on that defensive line. Now, this will be another thing I get to in camp, but I think they have it, but when do they make that move? When do they go to him will be the question.
My second takeaway is actually kind of makes it more of a question mark for me, and that's the way Tyrann Mathieu has practiced and spoken up until the last 2 days. You know, Monday, Tuesday, things have turned around. But so far, the theme of the offseason of Tyrann Mathieu has been he's not the Badger anymore. He stopped talking about lofty goals. He's not trash talking. He's really, you know, at least in practices, he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been making plays. And he's talking about his confidence. I mean, he doesn't have his confidence back, and which is weird. So he had the knee injury at the end of 2015. He dealt with it all 2016, it sounds like. And it almost sounds like that he's still – that knee injury, that second one, really – kind of changed things, and he's moving around better. He's had, you know, I think is what, like 6 interceptions in the last 2 days of practice, which kind of got his swagger going. Because if you've got a Tyrann Mathieu with no swagger, you just have another guy out there.
I kind of talked about that tonight on a radio spot with SB Nation, and that was it. I think, you know, statistically the defense was fine last year, but I think Matthews, I don't even know what the word is, but his, you know, rambunctious attitude, his the way, you know, all out style, his reckless, you know, his controlled recklessness that he plays with was missing last year. And it really hurt the team, and it made them, you know, it made them not as dynamic defensively. And I think him getting back to, as silly as it sounds, him getting back to being the honey badger is one of the most important aspects of this offseason going into the season, because they need him to be that special, unique player that, you know, keeps offensive coordinators awake at night. Because if it doesn't happen, this defense has, you know, a lot of questions outside of maybe the linebacking corps and obviously Patrick Peterson, but you need him to be that catalyst for the defense that gives them that swagger that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I talked about it on Radio Shaker locally on Tuesday evening, is that, you know, you need Mathieu to be a special defense. You can be a pretty good defense. You can be a great defense, but with Mathieu playing the way he did in 2015, it becomes a special defense. And they needed more of that last year. That's why statistically they were one of the top 5 defenses in terms of statistics until you looked at points, because then, you know, things happen. And that gives you hope in some ways, because even with a Mathieu, because last year, frankly, for much of the year, he was a liability. Quarterbacks were picking on him. I remember, you know, watching, you know, Blaine Gabbert in that first San Francisco game, you know, going after, who is that? Their slot receiver that I can't remember the name of now, that just was great. This was giving problems after problem. I'm going to emphasize that Monday, Tuesday, the comments have been like, he's back. So hopefully that the timeline is just right now, and he's going to look dynamic again in the games that we see in limited play with the starters in preseasons 2, 3, and 4. And of course, they're not going to play in preseason game 5 either. What would be takeaway number 3 for you?
Just how much last season meant to Robert Kimdiche and how he's seems, obviously it's practice, it's training camp, but how he seems to have matured to the point where he looks like the guy the Cardinals were hoping they were getting that fell to them in the first round. I mean, we see it literally every practice that he is, whether it's, you know, in individual drills or whether it's during team periods, he's making offensive linemen look silly at times. And that's what the Cardinals need. They lost clearly their best down lineman in Calais Campbell. They're not going to fill that with one person, but they need Kimdiche to be special, you know, maybe 5 to 10 times a game. They need him to do special things. You know, you've talked about Matthew, you know, taking them to being a great defense. If they get that play from Kimdiche, they can be a great defense because all of a sudden they have another interior force that has to be dealt with, which all that does is just free up Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden a little more.
True. For me, takeaway number three is the competition at cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson just hasn't been a competition at all. Justin Bethel, it seems like, you know, all offseason has grabbed a hold of that, has done really well. Brandon Williams hasn't really challenged him. Eli Buka did challenge him. In fact, Eli Buka now is off the team, having reached an injury settlement as he got hurt again. Ronald Zamora. I mean, really, no one challenged him. And so this competition we're expecting between Bethel and Williams just hasn't materialized. And that's one of the takeaways for which, you know, I'm okay with seeing because I think everything's in a good place. Though you wanted to see Williams compete better with him. I mean, obviously we know we talked about at length last year the issues of having to rely on him. He hasn't made some of the progress I hope they'd make, or simply Bethel's just playing that much better. And that's one of my big takeaways, is the fact that the competition everyone was expecting because they thought, oh, neither one of those are very good. Bethel's clearly the better player and is making plays, and BA is back to saying, you know, I'm not really worried because, hey, Bethel's going to be back and he's been practicing great.
And he's magically healthy after they signed Tremont Williams.
I noticed that. You know, he said it was a day-to-day thing. I think they were going to hold him out. They talked like they were going to hold him out till Monday or whatever. But, yeah, as soon as they signed Tremont Williams, you know, Bethel's back out there. And for good reason, because it was an injury that caused his issues a year ago anyway. And his getting back out there will keep a hold on that job, and we'll see. You know, I wrote about it, and that's – I think we now have a legitimate competition. You know, Tremont Williams been a starter his whole career. So,
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
I mean, even last year when he wasn't great in Cleveland, he started at three different spots, outside in the slot and then at safety eventually. And, you know, he's going to push Bethel, which is what they needed because they weren't getting that from Brandon Williams. Let's just be honest.
Right. There was no competition.
Which is, you know, disappointing in and of itself, but, you know, another story for another day.
And you know, takeaway number four for me is actually, and you know, as much as I think people are going to, I don't know if I'm a Blaine Gabbert homer or just a honk for him, but my one of the takeaways is that, no, I don't know what to think of Gabbert, because he impressed early on, and then I had to pull back based on watching him once there was hitting going on. Now, granted, they still don't hit the quarterback. So for me, takeaway number four is the still uncertain but promising but uncertain status of Blaine Gabbert on this roster. He looks good. There's some throw. Yeah, I watch him make some throws in practice. You're like, wow. Like, you see the way Carson throws. Gabbert's makes some beautiful throws. He's not as good with the touch, but his arm talent is undeniable. And there are times when you're like, oh, he should be beating Stanton. But then the last couple of practices, I was like, there are a couple of times that it looked like he was hesitant to pull the trigger on a throw. And he was real quick to run, which, you know, might be a strength. But when you have a guy like Palmer who likes to move around and wait for things to develop, which Andrew Luck does the same thing, Ben Roethlisberger did the same thing, you don't necessarily want him taking off and scrambling after read number one and read number two aren't there.
And that's what my concern with him has been the whole time. It's never been what he does in camp, because he's clearly been good enough in camp to be a starter for two different teams. He's clearly been good enough in camp to get picked up by three different teams, or, you know, be a top 10 pick and then be picked up or traded for by the San Francisco 49ers and then picked up by the Arizona Cardinals. So there's clearly enough there when he's not having to worry about getting hit. It's what happens when the mess is going on. And that's the big question for him. My final takeaway, and this is kind of silly, but it goes to show that it's something that the Cardinals took seriously. And that's that Phil Dawson has really kind of just made special teams not talked about again. It's not a topic. It's not something that we see tweeted about other than, oh, Phil Dawson nailed a 52-yard field goal to end practice type stuff. It's gone back to being something that's expected. Maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe, you know, maybe that'll lull everybody back into a false sense of security. But I think it's great that the Cardinals don't have, I mean, obviously they have a punter battle going on, but, you know, at some point they're going to get that right. But I think addressing the kicking position, maybe overpaying Phil Dawson, was brilliant by Steve Keim, because it was a kicking situation that, you know, you can point to
cost them games last year.
Yeah,
you can point to cost them clearly two wins, and you can say perhaps a third with that Miami game when they missed two extra points and one was returned for a 2-point conversion, and they missed a field. I mean, geez, that was, you know. And kicking was a big deal.
Right. And he may not be a guy that you're going to trust from 52 out, but he's a guy from, I really feel like maybe 50 in, that it seems like it's a lock. And that's something that we never really had with Catanzaro. You know, from 50 out, we actually felt okay about what Catanzaro was doing. But it was everything else that you were always like, all right, here we go again.
Right. Well, and Catanzaro, the thing with him, it was he would get in a groove, but then he'd miss one, and you're like, and then he'd be in a funk. It seemed like there was a funk every year. There was just a part of the season where you're like, ugh. And last year, that very first miss got in his head. And my description for Dawson, he is refreshingly boring. There is nothing flashy about him. He is very, very methodical in everything he does, and it's just, okay, I did this, now I'm going on to the next kick, I'm going to do the next thing. He has everything, and he's been doing this forever. So everything about his practice habits and his workouts are very methodical and deliberate, and it's refreshingly boring because he just hits field goals. And you know, I watched when he comes out for the part where he's kicking, you know, he nails everything. And then past 50, you know, I watched him on one of the Saturdays. He nails it from 52. He nails it from, then he puts it at 56. He missed one, then hit it again. And you're just like, there's no worries about the kicking game. That's not going to say he's going to miss every, he's not going to miss any kicks this year, because that's kind of absurd, because he will, I think. But yeah, that's, you know, that almost made my list, actually, of takeaways, to be perfectly honest. And that's, you know, and from there, coming up next on Rise Up Sea, where we're going to talk about, you know, who's helping themselves, who's hurting themselves. I don't think it'll take too long to talk about that. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and let's talk about who's helping themselves and who's hurting themselves. For me, number one, who's helping himself, Justin Bethel. He's been solid. And I think, you know, assuming he's not going to play in this game, he's healthy and he looks decent in the preseason games to come. That's the position where fans have no confidence. In fact, there isn't a normal Cardinals fan out there, just like, you know, not the diehards, but just your casual Cardinals fans, follows the team, roots for the team. They don't have any confidence in Bethel. Bethel is kind of a four-letter word right now, for lack of a better term, for a lot of fans. And I think he's really helped himself so far this training camp.
And, you know, I mentioned him, but I think Kim Dietrich has really helped himself. It's been a breath of fresh air to see him take that, you know, needed next step into year two and look like the guy that they drafted and play like the guy that so many expected him to play like. So, you know, it's lame, it's boring, but, and it's what we really expected from him last year, but to see him doing it this year and consistently doing it in and out of practice, I think it's been great.
And for a guy, for me, who's hurt himself is Andre Ellington. It's not necessarily he's done anything in camp. It's just the, you know, the addition of Chris Johnson really ended his tenure here. And there was a comment that, because, you know, they brought him back to be a receiver because they felt that running back, you know, there wasn't much there. And the comment, because he got moved fairly quickly, I was in a scrum where he was talking, and the reaction that he gave, it wasn't the words that he said, it's his reaction when someone said, so how'd that go with it, the receiver room? And the expression he had on his face, the kind of the chuckle that he had before he started answering was, it didn't go well. You know, it didn't go well that the receiver room and then the complexity of the wide receiver position was just too much for him.
Well, and to be fair, we know that Arians' offense is overtly complicated. yes. We know that guys that have been in this system for 4 years, Michael Floyd, can't remember what routes to run still.
Or what side of the field to line up on.
Right. I mean, last year he was benched in a game because he didn't know where to line up. He has been in the system for 4 years. So for Andre Ellington not, I mean, again, you're completely right. I would never argue with you on this subject, but in his defense slightly, you know, it's not, you know, exactly an easy offensive system to learn from the wide receiver position because you are running so many option routes, which means you have side adjustments that are not called that you have to make on the fly, and expecting him to do that in a summer was probably a little much to ask because he's never done it before. But it is kind of disappointing that the free Ellington movement is going to go out with a whimper instead of a bang.
Yes. A player who, for me, has helped himself. There's a couple of them, but in one of them, unfortunately, ended kind of tragically in terms of football forward. So, Ironhead Gallen looks good. I don't know if he'll be enough to make the roster, but he's helping himself most certainly. And Ronald Zamort, you know, he came out of nowhere to be on the first team ahead of Brandon Williams, and then of course he tears his ACL. So, those guys, I think, have helped themselves.
And that's, I mean, it obviously it happens every year and things of that nature, but you feel that so much for those undrafted guys that scrap and claw, and, you know, not that Brandon Williams or, you know, other guys aren't putting the work in, but that just, you know, that make that jump. And then an injury just derails everything that they're working towards. It's kind of sad. A guy for me that hasn't helped himself, and all reports have been that he's actually played pretty okay in camp, is Aaron Dobson. Dude, stay healthy. Why can people not stay on the field? Like, you're fighting for a position, you're not, or a roster spot. You're not fighting for, you know, to be the second wide receiver or third, like you're fighting for a roster spot against a bunch of young and hungry wide receivers. And it sounds like in the red and white practice that Krishan Hogan took advantage of some extra opportunity that Aaron Dobson being gone allowed. You want to see Dobson succeed because he's a very talented player. He was a very talented player with the New England Patriots that had issues similar to Michael Floyd. Consistency catching the ball, consistency in routes. So the talent has always been there. That's why he was a second-round draft pick. It's just that the Patriots don't really – have time is not the right word, but they don't put up with that nonsense. And they, you know, clearly it was a little bit of nonsense from him. And now, you know, it, again, it's not his fault that he got hurt, but you would just like these guys to, you know, to see them finish the fight instead of, you know, getting that TKO because they had to stop the fight because they're injured.
Like, oh well. One player for me who's kind of hurt himself, and that's Brandon Williams. We saw when he had to step into the first team, he's really physical. He's not afraid to make tackles, and he makes plays. The issue is, you know, last year he's competing for a starting spot. You know, he's making progress, making plays, and he's not taking the next step. And while they're pleased with this progress, he hasn't made enough progress to warrant to say that he's helping himself. And especially after he won the job out of camp. Now, it was partially out of, you know, attrition, but there was excitement about what he could offer. And there hasn't been that this time around. And we'll see during the, you know, basically it's if he's asked to do anything but press man, he struggles, which, you know.
But even in that, is he I mean, he's still not finding the ball in the air, which is, you know, the final part of that press man right. coverage. And like you said, when he's asked to play off man, he looks – lost is probably too strong of a word, but I've used the terminology with Kareem Martin before. You know, they just look like a newborn baby giraffe. Like they don't really know how to function. they look odd. It just doesn't look natural. And again, I don't know if it's fair to judge him because he has had a full year with the Cardinals, but he only had 500 snaps at cornerback in college. Obviously he had practice reps as well, but we've seen that doesn't necessarily mean anything because he looked, you know, good in practice last year. He was ready when he was the starter and getting roasted by Chris Hogan in game one of the regular season. So I'm with you. And I think the disappointing is probably too strong of a word, but I think it's just disappointing that, and maybe it's a Bruce Arians motivation thing. We know he likes these type of techniques, but I just think it was disappointing that he never got elevated, you know, that it was Ronald Zamort. Great story, Zamort, but when you invest that highly in a player, a third-round draft pick, and he's getting passed over by undrafted free agents, it just screams like a miss. Now, I'm not saying it's a miss. I'm not saying he's a bust. I'm not saying any of that. That's what it says. So you hope that doesn't continue.
Another topic of discussion worth dealing with, and that we're going to talk a little bit about now, and that's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red, and that's the Jared Bildier absence that turned into maybe he was going to retire. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and perhaps the biggest head-scratcher of camp was on last Thursday when Jared Bildier was oddly absent. There wasn't anything notable about it, except for you could tell that it wasn't necessarily it wasn't planned initially. It wasn't something they expected to have to happen because, you know, they didn't have their rotations swapped. It was John Wetzel doing first and second team reps instead of seeing everyone shift up, which is typically what happens on a day, on a scheduled day off or an injury. So something came up. You know, around here in local radio said there were whispers. Now, I personally, I was there over the weekend and I didn't hear anything to this effect, but some of the guys who were more dialed in heard whispers that he was thinking about hanging up the cleats, you know, and putting the pads away and retiring. And he came out and Bob Cabana with AZ Central, the Arizona Republic, got the one-on-one with him. And Valdir opened up and said he was contemplating he needed a day, he needed a breather from football. He was contemplating his future. And he didn't say how much he thought about retiring or how close he came. But the tip that McManaman and other reporters have gotten was that he had told some people in the organization that he was done. And for whatever reason, he's now back. And you and I had an interesting discussion about this off the air. Some of which he you know, the whole CTE study, that I think that especially for some of the big guys, not the skill players, but you're in the trenches guys, is a little bit of a scary thing. We've seen it, you know, Ryan Clady, Brandon Albert, the tackle out of, in Baltimore. I can't remember his name. It was another guy I was familiar with.
John Urschel.
Yes, Urschel. And, you know, they're walking away from the game, almost like a knee-jerk reaction to the study. But on top of that, he had to rehab really hard last year. His not only that, you know, Bob McManaman on the radio today talked about how just absolutely mangled his hands and fingers were from playing. In addition to the torn triceps, he had to rehab, which was a lot of work. He's playing a new position. He's now 30 years old. That's, you know, he's at that age where you wonder, how long do I keep doing this? But it's an odd time to do it because it was, you know, a week into training camp and a week before the preseason opener. You would have thought that perhaps that was a question that he thought about before camp started.
I think it's a group of things. And again, Jess and I are not saying this is what we've heard. This is Jess and I just talking, speculating, having a conversation. But I think there were a couple of factors involved. One, we know, so this is a fact, we know that he was unhappy about being moved from left tackle to right tackle. That's just a fact. He wasn't happy about it.
He's 30 years old. He was willing. He's a team player, but it's not, I mean, right. He made it clear. He did it. After the season, he's like, you know, I've never played even a rep of right tackle.
Right. And so he's a 30-year-old. He's a 7-year veteran, I believe. He's being asked to play a new position he's never played in his life. He's made $26 million, just under $26 million, but $26 million in his career. Financially, he's, you know, set for life. And he's coming off his second torn triceps. These are, and the rehab process for that is a complete and utter bear. It is not something you want to do. It's not something you want to be a part of. And so I think all of these compounded into him really asking, do I want to do this still? Do I want to push my body? Do I want to continue to push myself to the limit that I have for so long? And then the other question I had, and I, you know, it's not fair and it by no means means anything, but we heard rumblings, talk that part of the reason Brandon Albert, the newly acquired left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, retired was that he was struggling to block some players that have not been good for the Jaguars. Now, this could have been just jokes within the media grouping, or it can be some serious conversation. It made me wonder aloud, is Jared Valdir struggling at right tackle a little bit, let's be honest, having to deal with Marcus Golden every day is not something that many people are going to be looking forward to. So all of that could, all of those things, you know, the injury, the move, the financial security, the, you know,
brain study.
The brain study, and then maybe some struggles for the first time in the last, you know, 5-6 years as a pro. Could all of that have just compounded to, I need to step away. I need to reevaluate if this is where I want to be and this is what I want to do. And he came back. So obviously he seems like he's in for this year. He seems like he's ready to go. So from the Cardinals standpoint, I don't think that there could have been a better result because they have to have him. John Wetzel's not a bad player. He's a nice swing tackle backup to have.
But he's no Jared Valdir, who was a more than solid left tackle, whom they moved to right tackle, giving you the potential of having two very good tackles to going to an able player. I mean, it's like going from, you know, Bobby Massey to Bradley Saul, who can stick around on a roster. He can do some things. And John Wetzel at least has shown he can play. I mean, he's not bad, but no one's going to mistake him for Jared Valdir. So they could survive, but there'd be no depth. They'd have zero anything proven behind him, because then you've got Will Holden, who's not big enough or strong enough yet. You've got Givens Price. You've got Jonathan McLaughlin, or you have to risk it with even Cole Toner at tackle, and which he hasn't really practiced.
Exactly, and so it's almost reminiscent of when, and I know this is not something people like to bring up, but when Levi Brown went down, and you know, it was, oh, it's just Levi Brown, it's no big deal. I made a bet with somebody on Twitter. I said, and they said, it can't get worse. And I said, it can get worse. And I made a bet with somebody, and I was right. It got worse. So, you know, it can get worse. It's like you said, Wetzel is above Bradley Saul. He's above D'Anthony Batiste, you know, names from the past that we've seen start meaningful games for the Arizona Cardinals. But as you said, Jared Valdir, DJ Humphreys, all of a sudden you feel very comfortable with your tackles. Mike Iupati, AQ Shipley, all of a sudden you feel very comfortable with your left guard and center. You know what you're going to get from four players. Maybe there are some questions about how great DJ Humphreys can be at left tackle, but you still feel comfortable. The biggest question is your right guard, and Evan Bain's, you know, been okay there. That's not a bad way to start 2017. You lose him, and all of a sudden you have Evan Bain and John Wetzel, and now you're wondering if that right side can block anybody. You're wondering, you know, what they're going to be able to do in the run game versus what you know Jared Valdir can do in the run game. It was a complete fortune that he decided to come back and continue to play for the Cardinals, because they would have been in a rough spot after what feels like, for the first time in the organization's history, you feel good about the offensive line. You don't feel great because you still have some wonder at three positions, but you feel good that they've got guys in the right place to be successful.
And, you know, I think he sees his mortality. I think that's one of it is, you know, he get moved from left tackle to right tackle. He's 30 years old. So you think, oh, the end's coming soon anyway. As a fan, I'm saying, come on, just make it through this year. There's basically this year left in that so-called window. You were probably getting cut after this year anyway.
Exactly. You're getting cut next year anyway. So just hang out
and retire so you don't have to be cut. And you announce your retirement after the season. You help develop the Evan Bain next to you, and you help lead DJ Humphreys become a great right tackle. And you have a deep playoff run, maybe championship. I mean, that's wishful thinking. But, you know, you can end your career – instead of just on a whim and suddenly, you can have a clear closure. You finish the season, you make the decision, because he probably wasn't coming back anyway. Plus, I mean, then he picks up another $6.5 million this year and doesn't have to, you know, doesn't have to pay back any of that signing bonus.
Exactly. He gets to game one and he's going to be worth close to $35 million in his career earnings. He's going to be 31 next year when, you know, he's probably going to be cut by the Arizona Cardinals. And he's going to have to had a chance to go out on a really
hopefully a good team. Hopefully.
Exactly. A good team in a good organization that took care of him and took a chance. Let's be honest. Everybody thought they got a huge discount on Jared Veldier when they got him for 5 years, $35 million, 17 guaranteed. But what they don't forget was they took a chance. He was coming off a left triceps tear. He hadn't played in, you know, he didn't make it through many games that year. I can't remember the specific number. And
like 4 or 5 games.
Yeah. And so it was a risk to give him basically a guaranteed 3-year contract. And the Cardinals did it and it worked out. You know, obviously they got 2.5-ish good years out of him before another tricep injury. You know, so if they get, if they get 2017 out of him, I think it's a win for both sides. He got all of his money and the Cardinals got 3.5 years out of a guy that had already had a triceps tear and, you know, had an injury history and was a risk that they took, and it, you know, it'll be a slam dunk and something that Keim can hang his hat on.
And we'll wrap up the show. Coming up on our final segment, we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to for the Hall of Fame game. So that's coming up next on the final part of Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We've wrapped up kind of talking about the takeaways from camp. We've talked about the players who have helped and hurt themselves. Sometimes, you know, literally. Jared Veldier's decision to step away for a day and then return. Now we're getting actual football. We have the Hall of Fame game. We know the starters aren't playing. The only quote-unquote starter who will get a little bit of play is Hassan Reddick, because I guess technically he's not really a starter because he's filling in for Dale Buchanan. He'll play a little bit. The rest, you know, none of the starters on the offensive line. This is going to be a game of backups against a game of backups. And it's we're going to pick – each of us is going to pick 3 to 5 players or things that we're watching for in the Hall of Fame game. I want to start number one. Number one for me is the Blaine Gabbert show, because this is, and we were talking about off the air, Blaine Gabbert, we need to see him play games. We need to see some tape. We need to see him with tackling and pressure and actually getting hit. If he still looks like what he's looked like in practice, which has been a pretty good quarterback, does he do anything stupid? And the point I made on a radio show earlier today, and I talked to you off the air, is even though he's going to be with twos and he's going to be playing against twos, you're talking about a guy who should look like, if the rest of the players on the field are doing adequately, he should look like the best player on the field. Now, I'm not going to say he needs to look like a superstar. Don't be a mitigated event disaster, because with all the talk, and I you know, the just little things that I've heard, whether it's from Michael Bidwell, Harold Goodwin, Bruce Arians, they suggest they see a future with him on the team. Don't be a disaster. Don't be a dumpster fire on the field. Be competent. And don't even just be look like you know what you're doing out there.
You know, I joked about it with you last week or 2 weeks ago when we were on the air about this, and I'm going to write about it for Thursday. So if you listen to this before, you'll have heard it, but this whole competition has never been about Blaine Gabbert versus Drew Stanton. This has always been about Blaine Gabbert versus Blaine Gabbert. This has been about Blaine Gabbert showing that all these opportunities, the 10th overall draft selection, all of this has been warranted. And in his pretest, and I call it a pretest, it wasn't a test. In his pretest in the red and white practice, he didn't pass. I mean, it's just as simple as that. He didn't pass it. It wasn't what you wanted to see from Gabbert. And you're absolutely right. We're talking about a 7-year veteran. Yes, he's going to have, you know, second and third team players with him. But from a competency standpoint, he should be making good reads, good throws. But you have to see him stay in the pocket. You have to see him win from the pocket. You have to see him show that when things break down, because they're going to, that his first instinct isn't to run, but it's to find a throwing window and make a throw down the field. Because in Bruce Arians' offense, that is the most important aspect, and that is the most important thing that he asks of his quarterbacks. You and I talked about this off the air, but when you build a prototypical Bruce Arians quarterback, I'm not sure from a physical talent standpoint that Blaine Gabbert wouldn't be close to what the finished product is. Big, physical, mobile, able, you know, good, strong arm, able to extend plays. It's just that he doesn't know how to work from a pocket that is breaking down. Say what you want about Carson Palmer, but he's almost too methodical at times. He almost takes too much time to make throws from the pocket. He understands the importance of that. So you're right. I mean, that is without a doubt the number one need to be watched thing in this game. It's what does Blaine Gabbert look like now that there's live bullets? I talked with Dave Halprin, the SB Nation editing manager at Blogging the Boys, and he said the game plan for the Cowboys in preseason under Jason Garrett has been rather vanilla. They're probably not going to blitz a bunch. They're probably not going to give a bunch of exotic looks. That means the Cardinals should have the ability to move the ball, because as you said, this isn't some schmo. This isn't Logan Thomas. Yeah, this isn't Logan Thomas or Phillip Sims or even Matt Barkley. This is a former top 10 pick in his 7th season in the NFL. If he looks like Barkley or Logan Thomas or any of these other guys that have come through here, yeah, you're concerned that he's just not going to get it. But I agree, that's easily the number one most important thing.
What's another player or thing that you're looking ahead to watch in this game?
I honestly don't know how much he's going to play, but I am looking forward to watching Kim Dichie. I'm going to keep bringing him up, but I honestly think outside of Tyrann Mathieu and obviously Patrick Peterson, but I'm never going to talk about Patrick Peterson on this podcast because his greatness is just, you know, you can't talk about it enough, and he does so much for the team that his importance can't be stated enough. But I think outside of Tyrann Mathieu, Kim Dichie's growth and ability is probably the most important thing for the defense this year. He might end up being, you know, maybe the third or fourth most important defensive player this year if he takes that next step that he seems to have taken so far. But again, we're talking training camp. There were flashes last year in training camp. Hell, there were flashes last year against the Houston Texans when he finally got on the field and he was making disruptive plays. But it needs to be a consistent disruption. It needs to be a consistent fire, a consistent motor, and a consistent effort. If you get that from him, all of a sudden you're starting to feel really good about that defensive line.
And for me, it's not just Kamdichie. My next thing I'm looking forward is actually that whole young defensive line. It says no Rucker, no Peters, no Morrow. So that leaves a starting defensive unit with the defensive line of Kamdichie, Olsen, Pierre, and Rodney Gunter. That has to be excited because I want to see that young core be disruptive. And this is the group that they've developed to, you know, to replace Darnell Dockett, to replace Calais Campbell, and ultimately replace Frosty Rucker and Corey Peters. Can we get a glimpse of that, of some flashy splash plays, and not just that, but the steady containment on the inside as well? I want to see them, especially since, you know, the Cowboys have a great offensive line. I don't know what their depth looks like in terms behind their starters, and their offensive line is not what it was a year ago. So hopefully they dominate. Hopefully that first unit that they throw out there, the Cardinals, looks great.
The next guy I'm looking forward to, and again, not sure how much he's going to play, I just want to see Buda Baker. Through the draft process, he was one of the guys that I just talked about, raved about as much as I could, because he reminded me of Tyrann Mathieu, the way he played, the ferociousness that he played despite being undersized. And then you add in that he is a guy, a playmaker, you know, a ball hawk, all of these intangible things. I just want to see him on the field. I want to see him in action. We know we're not going to see Tyrann Mathieu. We know we're not going to see Patrick Peterson. We may see a little bit of Son Reddick, but I want to see Buda Baker and getting a chance to kind of roam a little bit.
And then for me, the last player I'm going to be focusing on, and that's simply this, Brandon Williams. He's going to get a lot of playing time. Is he going to be how messy is he going to be? Or is he going to make a step forward to show that, you know, maybe there's some potential there with him at that position? And that wraps up the, you know, I mean, there's always these other little things like, oh, who's punts better? You know, that's like one more. TJ Logan. I want to see him be fast and play in space. I want to see fast, because that sounds exciting.
And another thing I'll be watching is I want to see these young wide receivers. I want to see Chad Williams. I want to see Krishan Hogan. I want to see Larry Clark. I want to see who is the guy that fills that fifth receiver, maybe six receivers, depending on, you know, what they do with the roster this year. I want to see who kind of stands out and steps up. This is going to be a great opportunity because the Cowboys' top corners aren't bad. Their depth is less than ideal, and but I mean the Cardinals is as well. Let's not throw too many stones, but I mean it's similar to the Cardinals situation. So you would like to see one of these young receivers. Obviously Chad Williams is making this roster. I based on what he's done in the first 10 days of camp, I would say it's nearly impossible for him not to make this roster if he is healthy for game one. But we have no idea on anybody outside of him that if a young guy can do anything. And Jerron Brown has come back and looked really nice. So, you know, are they going to, is it Krishan Hogan? Is it an Aaron Dobson? Dobson's not playing, but are one of these guys going to push for a roster spot? I'm sure somebody like Hogan or Larry Clark is going to end up on the practice squad, but I want to see one of these guys make that push that Chris Hubert did last year.
Yeah. And with that, we will wrap up our 160th show, our training
camp. Wait, we're not going to make a guess on who wins this preseason game?
Oh, no.
Jeez. Did you know this? Did you know? I didn't know this, but I was reading through the Cardinals notes that they sent out. The last time these two teams met in preseason was in August of 2013. Did you know what the final score was?
I haven't looked it up, so tell us.
12-7.
Oh my gosh.
So, and that was an August 17th game. So August 17th, 2013.
That was a preseason 2 game. That was a preseason 2 game. Yeah,
so that was preseason 2. So that's not even preseason 1.
No, I think I remember that because that was the first year. So we want to see what Palmer had. It was kind of, yeah. Well, here's the thing. The over-under that they have set for this, yes, people bet on the Hall of Fame game. The over-under is only 37 points.
I found it for 35.5. It'll be fun.
Preseason games, and we've talked about it before. This is about individuals, not about it's about individual results and not team results. It's about and especially we're not seeing any starters, so it doesn't really matter. And obviously, you want to see your team win because it means your scrubs are beating somebody else's scrubs. But yeah, it's about. Especially in this game, because we're not even going to see the first team. When they play next week against the Raiders, you want to see them play well with the starters in. And then after that, it doesn't really matter except for the individual. So, yeah, no, we're not making any guesses. We're not doing that nonsense. And so we're going to wrap it up with this Hall of Fame game on Thursday. We'll be back next week to talk about, well, risers and fallers, good, you know, stock rising stuff, all that sort of stuff. Who's making the case? Who's hurting themselves? And then we'll look ahead to the next preseason game when we'll actually see pretty much the starters for a little bit. It'll be like the real first preseason game. This is like an extra fourth preseason game. This is what it's like. But that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Rise Up Sea Red is the handle for both of those. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher Radio. It's featured on Revenge of the Birds, featured on My Site Cards. We're initially hosted on Blog Talk Radio. Again, preseason starts this week. Takeaways next week. And that's a wrap, guys. Thanks for listening, as always. And again, we're signing off. Seth Cox, Jess Root, go Cardinals, and rise up, Sea Red.